This is a CKTZ News Update. I'm Lonnie Taylor. LivingWageForFamilies.ca is a nonprofit that certifies businesses in British Columbia to be considered a living wage employer. LivingWageForFamilies.ca has released new data for 2023, stating that the city of Victoria's living wage rate is $24.29 per hour. Powell Rivers is $23.33 per hour. Salt Spring Island is $24.36 per hour, which exceeds the living wage rate of Victoria, the capital of BC. I caught up with a representative with Living Wage for Families for BC, Anastasia Friend, to find out more about what the criteria is to become a living wage employer, how it can affect rural communities, and if any employers in our region are certified living wage employers. Tell me what you do for Living Wage for Families.
Sure. At Living Wage for Families, we have three main functions. So we partner with community groups across the province to calculate what their local living wage is. And then we certify employers who commit to paying both their direct staff and their contracted workers a living wage. And then the final thing that we do is we advocate for government policies to make life more affordable for people and also to lift up the wages of the lowest paid workers.
Amazing. So are you considered a nonprofit?
Yeah, so we are a nonprofit. We're part of Van City Community Foundation, which is linked in with Van City Credit Union. So we're a program of Van City Community Foundation, and then a lot of the work we do is part of their wider work on housing affordability and things like that.
Okay, what kind of community groups, like other smaller foundations in the BC region?
Yep. So we work with the Canadian Centre for Policy Alternatives to help set the kind of the framework for what should go into the living wage. About 20 years ago, when the living wage was first being created as a concept, we did workshops with workers to find out what are the budget items that people are spending money on. So they're spending money on rent, they're spending money on food, childcare, if you're a parent with two kids, what other things are you spending money on that are really the essentials you need to be able to get by? And so every year we calculate what the living wage is for communities across the province. We take the methodology that the CCPA have done, and then we partner with community groups to find out some of those local costs. And those community groups are social planning councils, the Comox Valley Social Planning Council, for example. They're also foundations, so the Sunshine Coast Community Foundation. Occasionally, it's just a really eager, passionate volunteer in a community who wants to know what their living wage is, and we work with them. We have the same consistent methodology across the province so that we can, if we're comparing community to community, we're comparing the same things. That being said, we know that certain communities have certain kind of individual needs and requirements. So for example, in an urban area, I think it's fair to say that a family would be able to get by on one car and one transit pass. But in rural areas where there's no transit options, we changed our methodology last year to include the cost of two cars. And then some communities which are particularly remote have some additional kind of needs. So if you look at the highest living wage in the province is up in Haida Gwaii, and that's because it also includes like the cost of having to get a ferry to the mainland to stock up on essentials and stuff like that.
Okay, we can definitely relate to that. I'm glad you brought up Haida Gwaii, who's the living wage up there, on according to your website, is $25.87 an hour.
Yeah.
Moving into just specifically Cortez, then I'm looking at, I don't see a living wage specifically for Cortez Island, but we've got other places in the area. So when I inquired with you originally, you said Comox Valley. So I'm curious, why is Comox Valley associated with Cortez Island? Or is there a methodology that can happen moving forward to get a more specific read on the living wage here in Cortez?
Yeah, we can definitely partner to find out more local, a more specific one. The reason that we picked the Comox Valley is because it's the closest. A lot of the figures that we use, particularly for food, for childcare, they are regional figures. So they're the cost of how much it costs. We get that figure from the BC government on how much does a basket of goods cost? And it's broken up by region. And so I think it's like Vancouver Island, north of Nanaimo is one region, similar to get the kind of cost of childcare data and stuff like that. There are limitations to the methodology when it comes to really small communities, and we're aware of those limitations, and it's one of those back and forth that we have is how much do we want to make sure that we're reflective of that community specific cost, whereas also trying to be consistent everywhere, so that if we've got a map, we are actually being realistic. When you compare one community to another, it is similar costs and not different ones. And last year, the living wage increased across the province largely because of the two inflation has increased everywhere. But we found actually that food in particular has gone up at a far higher rate than the general rate of inflation, in particular on Vancouver Island, where the cost of trying to get food over to the island means that it's more expensive than on the mainland, which is why actually Victoria's living wage for the first time has come out higher than Vancouver's living wage.
Okay, that makes a lot of sense. So, are there any employers in the region like Campbell Rivers, much closer than Comox's or Quadra Island? Are there any living wage employers close to us?
Do we have any in Canberra? So we've got quite a lot in Comox Valley. The Social Planning Council have done a really amazing job of engaging with local employers and trying to get them to pay a living wage. I don't think at the moment we have any in Campbell River, or certainly none that are paying the higher new living wage rate. There might be a few that are still hoping to get there, but aren't there quite yet. We have some in Courtenay, we have some in Comox, we have some in Cumberland, but none yet, I don't think, in Campbell River.
When you're working with small businesses or even nonprofits, because I see that there are some nonprofits, United Way just became a living wage employer. What kind of advice or guidance do you give small businesses or nonprofits like that that are struggling to reach that goal of becoming a living wage employer?
When an employer approaches us and they say they want to be a living wage employer, we're like, that's fantastic. It's great that you have that goal. The living wage can be made up of base wage. It's the base wage that you pay, plus also any other non-mandatory benefits that you offer. So if you offer, for example, a full employer-paid health and dental plan, that means that the worker doesn't have to take out their own health and dental plan. And that saves the worker, we calculate, about nearly $2 an hour in the cost of taking out a health and dental plan. So that lowers your living wage by that. Equally, if you offer any additional paid time off, additional vacation beyond the kind of 10-day statutory minimum, additional paid sick days beyond the 5 days, that can all lower your living wage requirements. So it gets a bit more manageable if you're looking at it there. And then the next thing to do is basically look at where you are at the moment. Are your staff, for example, earning minimum wage, which is about to be $16.75? And what do you need to do to bring them up to, we're talking about the Comox Valley, 2026. It might be that you can bring them all up immediately. That's amazing. It might be that you need more time and develop that plan and kind of work with your staff and your workers to do that. And then hopefully one day you can join the program. And employers have found that by paying a living wage, it reaps massive benefits, both for workers. I mean, the benefit for workers is clear. They don't have to work multiple jobs just to make ends meet. They can spend that additional time with their family and in the community and that kind of thing. But it also makes business sense as well. Businesses that pay a living wage have reported lower staff turnover. It's easier to recruit, it's easier to retain staff. It also increases productivity, and it generally increases morale of the workforce.
Do you ever recommend, especially in rural communities, that businesses reduce their hours in order to reach these goals?
No, I think it's each business is unique, right? And each business owner knows their business and knows their business better than we can say. We can tell you what the hourly amount is to earn for a living wage. How you're going to get there will be unique for different businesses, whether that's you increase the cost of the goods that you're selling, is it that you change the structure of your workload? All of those different things are different for each business. And we certainly wouldn't want to necessarily give advice on how a business owner should run their business. But we do want to talk passionately about the benefits of paying a living wage once they've made that decision to commit to it. So each individual business owner will have their own kind of ways of doing it. But we do know in terms of reducing hours that across the province, since the pandemic, there are lots of businesses that now don't open on Mondays and Tuesdays because they can't find staff to work those hours. And paying a living wage can be one way of combating that labor shortage that we're hearing about. That being said, I know in particular for food and beverage businesses, it is really tough right now because both your wholesale costs have increased and also your labor costs have increased. So how are you going to get there? And it may take time. And hopefully one day everyone across the province will be earning a living wage.
I do have two more questions. Hollyhock is a great example of this. It's got a lot of seasonal employment. They do have some year-round staff, but it's only about four of those staff members are year-round on Cortez. So I'm just wondering, how does that play into when you're figuring out a living wage, whether or not a job is year-round versus seasonal?
Yeah, we say that you've got to pay your staff the hourly living wage, even if they're only there seasonally, because often seasonal workers don't necessarily have the guaranteed income they have for the rest of the year. So actually, it's even more important for seasonal workers to be able to earn a living wage so that they can have that money for later in the year when they may not be able to have that work. And although seasonal workers may not reap the benefits of kind of recruitment and retention because they're only there for a short period of time, actually, it's really important for them to earn a living wage. So we encourage employers to pay all of their staff a living wage. It may be that they need to start with their year-round ones, and then they can include their seasonal ones later, because of course seasonal workers may not get some of those benefits that I mentioned in terms of like health and dental and additional paid time off and those kind of things. But it's really important for those workers to earn a living wage, because when that season ends, they may not have a job lined up to help pay their kind of the next month's rent. for example?
We do have a foundation here, the Cortez Island Foundation. I don't know if they've been in touch with you before, but is that the kind?
Yeah, I think they may have reached out a few years ago, but encouraging to reach out again. It is interesting. We are still having conversations when we get to really small communities, like how fair and reasonable, like how accurate is the kind of the living wage, the calculations that we're using, but encouraging them to definitely get in touch and we can work with them to calculate their local living wage.
Lonnie Taylor, CKTZ News, Cortez Island. CKTZ News is brought to you by the Local Journalism Initiative, the program funded by Heritage Canada and administered through the Community Radio Fund of Canada.